Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. On this week's episode, we break down Texas A&M and Mississippi State. We have Michael Bonner from the Jackson Clarion Ledger on to give us a little bit of an inside look at that Bulldog team. We're also going to talk some baseball. The World Series is going on, and we'll have Ryan Posner from the Bryan College Station Eagle in here, who formerly covered the Texas Rangers this past summer before coming down to College Station. He'll break down some baseball with us, and of course, our favorite segment of the day, we'll pick some college football games with him later. So, that being said, let's get right to it. I'm going to pass it off to the guy over here who is rocking his best Robert Cessna look from the press conference yesterday. Green shirt, khaki shorts. That is Zach Taylor.
Hair's a little unkempt. Look like I kind of rolled out of bed, which he pretty much does for press conference day about 30 minutes before he comes up there. Yeah, one of those deals. And I really like this shirt, by the way.
That's a nice shirt.
Thank you for complimenting me on it. Nice, I mean, shirt. It fits nice and go golf in it. Yeah. You can go to work in it. I mean, it's a dual-purpose shirt, so that's always a plus.
Well, I will go ahead and admit to the fact that I pretty much just rolled right out of bed and rolled in here to do this podcast because I made a terrible life decision last night. I got home from work and thought, you know, I'm going to be a good adult here today. I'm going to, you know, knock out just a little bit more work, and I'm going to go straight to bed, get a good night's sleep, and then I got sucked in.
Yeah,
I got
famous last words.
In to the World Series of Poker.
See, normally I would put it on the World Series Poker if I wanted to go to sleep. Because if I'm not playing poker, I can't just sit there and watch it.
I was a big poker player in high school and college. I love playing some poker. I'm not going to go watch the stupid World Poker Tour crud that's on Fox Sports Southwest after all the Rangers and Stars game. That doesn't interest me. But when it's the final table, heads up, the final two guys playing for $8 million, and they're like throwing around like their bets are like, you know, $20 million, that interests me.
Kind of a big deal at that point,
right,
is it not?
Right. So, you know, the way it works is when they play several nights in a row, when they start with, like, I believe six players, and they work it down. And once it gets to the final two, that is the final night of the tournament. They play until it's over. And we had an interesting matchup with two dudes, one of them who was really aggressive, betting a lot, one who was really playing really conservative, and that made for one of the longest heads-up matches of the World Poker Tour in the last 5 years. They played like several hundred hands of heads-up poker, and I lasted until 4 in the morning.
Wow.
And then was like, you know, I can't do this anymore. I need sleep. My, you know, systems are shutting down because it's 4 in the morning. Woke up today and saw that the guy who was the chip leader ended up winning at around 6 a.m. today.
Now, was he the aggressor or was he the more conservative guy?
He was the aggressor. The conservative guy hit a it should have been over at about 3 in the morning when the guy went all in, and he hit a flush runner-runner on the turn in the river and doubled up and got new life and actually pulled within the closest he had been of the chip leader at about 3 in the morning, but then just kind of wouldn't be aggressive, wouldn't make any pre-flop raises, and eventually the guy wore him down. So
how does something like that work? Do you just play until one of them's out of money? Is
yeah.
that what it is?
Yeah, you just play until...
So you literally have either the choice of winning it all or losing all your money.
Well, yes, but the chips that they play for, it isn't actually like they had, you know, $100 million of chips. It's just 100 million chips. The chips that they have are, so, you know, it starts out with like 10 satellite locations, and all those people start with a certain amount of chips. The two set piles of chips at the final table represent all the chips from all the players that started.
Okay, so I got you. And
if you finish first, second, or third, you finish in the money.
Okay.
So third place, I think, took home like $3 million.
Okay, so there's automatically a purse. Like, it's not like you're betting with your actual money.
Right. You're betting with the chips that have accumulated through the entire tournament throughout the course.
Shows how much I actually watch
about
poker.
You know,
and I'm a terrible poker player too. So.
I do love me some poker. I played a lot in high school. I was really into, like, it became really popular. It was kind of vogue there for like a year or two in like around 2005 and 6, and like everyone watched poker.
Mm-hmm.
And then it quickly, you know, now everyone doesn't watch poker. But, you know, the final table will get me hooked in till 4 in the morning. So There's that, and so
you're a little wobbly.
I'm
at
a
the
little
knees
wobbly.
Today.
I'm a little disheveled looking in here in the podcast, but that's
just
okay.
Glad you said something. I didn't want to be the first one to bring it up.
You look so nice in your green polo, and I'm over here looking like a hobo.
And I shaved too, so I've got that going for me. I had the John Daly stash for Halloween.
That is true.
And I had to shave off the rest of my beard, and now I just baby faced. So.
That is true. Well. Beyond poker, there is, you know, important things going on here in Aggieland. And
real important.
You know, kind of like, I don't know, the first ever college football playoff ranking for the Aggies, and they slide right into number four. They're in. You know, are you in? The Aggies are in.
Do you want to hear my thoughts? Do you really want to hear my thoughts?
I've just been. That's why I stayed up till 4 a.m.
You
I
were just
couldn't,
you, anticipatory,
yeah.
Wondering what my thoughts were on this college football ranking.
Yeah.
A&M has no business being at number four.
Boom. Dun, dun.
That's coming.
Dun.
That is coming from an Aggie. And look, you've got all these people that are super excited, all the maroon Kool-Aid drinkers that think that this is so fantastic. Look, have you not seen the first college football playoff ranking that came out had Mississippi State and Ole Miss both in it? Neither one ended up in the Final Four. Actually, only one team from that first college football playoff ranking ended up in the Final Four. So this means absolutely nothing, nada, zilch. There's still a lot of football left to be played. Texas A&M does have a very complimentary schedule. They're going to be playing after this weekend. They're playing the rest of their games at home. They're going to be favored in most of those games. One of those games includes UTSA, obviously Mississippi State for this week. Aggies are heavily favored in that one. Ole Miss has been down. The LSU game, I think, is really going to be telling. But the fact that A&M... at 7-1 is higher than Washington, who is 8-0. You can talk about the strength of schedule all you want. I understand that. But if there is a team that is 8-0 in a Power 5 conference, they have beaten teams like Stanford, Utah. They beat Utah in Salt Lake City. There is no reason. If I'm a Washington Huskies fan, I am livid. But you also have to remember that I think that these college football playoff committees are trolling everyone by saying, well, A&M's number four. And Washington is number five. That means that will be the status quo as we continue to go on. That is absolutely not true. Even if they both win out the rest of their games, Washington is likely going to leapfrog A&M if they win the Pac-12 title.
Like I said last night on Twitter and various places, it reminds me of 2014 with TCU. They come in the penultimate playoff rankings at number three, and then they go the next week and beat Iowa State by like 50 points. Ohio State comes in and wins a conference championship game against Wisconsin pretty handily, and then all of a sudden TCU falls to six. It's like, why were they at if a 50 point win was the difference between three and six, why were they at three to begin with? And I think if Washington wins out, if Texas A&M wins out, it's setting up A&M and A&M's fans for the same kind of crushing blow that falling from three to six. I mean, if we went out, if A&M wins out and doesn't go to the SEC title game, but you might have another Michigan loss or something like that. Things get really murky with teams that would go to a conference championship game and win, and A&M won't because Alabama is going to win out. And that conference championship game, they punish the Big 12 for it, and I think they would punish anyone else for not going to it as well.
I think it's almost impossible, and it really doesn't make much sense to me, to have two teams from the same conference because one of them is going to be the champion, one of them is not going to be, unless, of course, you're the Big 12. Which doesn't have a championship. They're going to start bringing back a championship. It's so weird. That being said, it makes absolutely no sense to me. And look, this is getting Aggies excited. This is angering other people. But in the long run, I don't think it's going to make one bit of difference. I don't think A&M is going to finish in the top four because Washington has a very good schedule for them. Probably their biggest game or their toughest opponent waiting for them is going to be Washington State, at Washington State for the Apple Cup, Mike Leach, the Pirate, over there. Other than that, they are playing some very winnable games. This is the way that I thought it should have gone. I have no problem with the top three. I think Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan all belong there. I think Washington should have been fourth. Louisville should have been fifth. They are at seven. And if I am Louisville, I am livid, because the only loss you have was a late... late not fluke loss but a late t- tough, close loss to Clemson at Clemson.
And that's a death knell for them because they don't have any other games through the rest of their schedule that can push them past Ohio State or Texas A&M.
Yeah, originally you would have circled Houston. Are they in the same? Are they in the Coastal with Clemson? Are they both in the same division?
I believe they're different.
Because if that's the case, then they could always rematch back in the ACC championship game. So that's something to keep an eye on, because if Louisville wins out the rest of the way, they get a rematch with Clemson. Supposing Clemson wins out the rest of the way, and that sets up a matchup, then that very well could end up being something else to look forward to in early December. But yeah, the Aggies don't belong at four, guys. I realize that their only loss came
Louisville
at Alabama.
And Clemson are in the same division.
Wow. So unless Clemson gets knocked off by somebody else, Louisville will not have a chance to make that up.
Right.
And originally we had Houston circled, but the Cougars have fallen off drastically.
Right.
Kentucky now might be an option or something to take a look at, because the Wildcats, believe it or not, are having an okay year this year. But I don't really know. Let's take a look at Louisville's schedule for the rest of the year. They're at Boston College. Boston College is terrible. Wake Forest has been better this year, but still they're 5-3. They're 2-2 in the ACC. And then you're at Houston, which could end up being a pretty big game, and versus at home against Kentucky.
Well, Houston went from being probably their best chance to be a resume booster to like the biggest trap game.
Yeah.
Because Houston still has Houston beat Oklahoma. They still have the capability to beat Louisville.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But they also it's a lose-lose for Louisville now.
Yeah. And if I am Louisville and I'm Washington, I'm pretty mad about this. Ohio State, I think Ohio State deserved to be 7. A&M should have been 6. Louisville should have been 5th. A&M 6th, Ohio State 7th. Wisconsin and Auburn at 8-9. I don't really understand that. Look, I understand Auburn has looked really good here lately,
but they look really bad.
At the beginning of the year, and it's crazy too when you start to factor in that might be A&M's best win so far this year, was going to Auburn and beating Auburn by 13 points?
Right,
29-16.
To that same argument, you know, a lot of the talk was about, well, they're rewarding A&M for their out-of-conference schedule playing UCLA. Well, what has UCLA done? Yes, they were ranked 18 to start out the season, but
that's a bit of a tricky one, though, because you can't look at UCLA's record now because they have been without Josh Rosen and are likely to be without him the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So that is a factor to take into play. But that being said, I still don't think UCLA would have been that good.
No.
Even with Josh Rosen, I think they're probably about a 500 team this year.
Right, right. It's good in name. It was good at the moment with whatever you're. That's putting a lot of value into preseason rankings, is what that is,
which we're not supposed to be doing, right?
Right, right.
And you know, A&M beats Arkansas. Well, Arkansas has really fell off the table here recently after getting spanked by Auburn. And they could make up some ground this week. They're playing Ole Miss, I believe. I'm not for sure who Arkansas is playing this week.
Arkansas is playing Florida.
Florida. So they can make up some ground. Arkansas could start to look better if they get a big win against Florida this week. You're right. That one's going to be in Fayetteville, I do believe. It is. A 2:30 kickoff against 11th-ranked Florida. But, yeah, overall, looking at these rankings, and I understand Aggies want to be excited, and I don't want to rate on anybody's parade. It is cool, okay? But there's no reason why A&M should be 4th.
Right, right.
A&M should be 6th, I think, at best, or maybe 5th at best. But they should be, I think, around 6th, ahead of Ohio State but behind Louisville.
Right, right. And here's the thing to look forward to this week. This is a position that A&M hasn't been in yet, ranked in the college football playoff. Really, they haven't been in this kind of position, even in the BCS era, in a really long time.
Exactly.
People want to talk about the chemistry of this team, their ability to look one game at a time, one practice at a time. The coaches just harp on that, and it's just about us. It's about us is the, you know, their
hashtag,
motto.
It's about
hashtag,
us.
Yeah. And that's really, really, really going to be put to the test this week, because I go back and having covered a team that was high in the college football rankings the past couple of years in TCU, it was a younger team. It's hard to compare that TCU team in like 2014 when they were really in the mix for stuff and this A&M team, because that was a young team with players that hadn't had a lot of experience and a new system that was completely different from – it was hard to scout. But, you know, Trayvon Boykin, great quarterback, but he had just moved into a starting rank. A lot of wide receivers just getting notoriety. Josh Doctson was just getting on the radar. This A&M team has some much more savvy veteran players than that TCU team did, and players who have been there in big crowds, been there in big games, and has been successful in that. So I think there is a difference there. But I think, like, when you have that number four, whether you watch the selection show or not, you've seen it on Twitter, you know where your team is. You know you are ranked number four. You know you're on that side of the fence getting into the college football playoff, and it's going to affect the mentality that you take in the game. It always does.
Well, and like I said, I think this is frills, but I think it's setting Aggie fans up to be disappointed because, as I said, Washington has a very, very good schedule. So do the Aggies.
That Washington State, Mike Leach could do A&M fans some favors. That Washington State game is going to be good, the Egg Bowl, the last game of the season.
If you were an Aggie, you are doing everything. You are always rooting against whoever Washington is playing that week. You got to be.
It's the Scott Woodward conundrum.
Correct. I actually tweeted out, I wonder how many of his Seattle friends are loving him right now after coming from Washington to A&M. But yeah, if you are looking at the Huskies, you've got to root against every team that they play because you need Washington to have a loss probably in the regular season. Even if they lost the Pac-12 title game, that would be big too. But you would really like them to have a loss in the regular season and A&M to win out to help to solidify that number four spot.
Every game from now on out needs to be hashtag BTHO whoever A&M's playing and BTHO Washington.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, well, that is a little bit of a look. I think we'll get into a little bit more on Mississippi State when we welcome in Mike over there from the Clarion Ledger here coming up in the podcast and later when we make our picks. It's going to be a fairly easy game for A&M, I think. I think we're all in agreement that they should win this game, but there are some challenges. We'll get into that next.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. And joining us today is the Clarion Ledger's very own, the Mississippi State beat writer, Michael Bonner. And Michael, we really do appreciate you coming on. An SEC matchup, you never can overstate that each time coming in. And especially after the college football playoff rankings came out, a lot of people feel different ways about that. But the number four Aggie is going to be taking on Mississippi State at their house. What do you see from this matchup? What really jumps off the page at you?
Texas A&M's offense averaging about 30.38 points per game. Little lower than what Mississippi State faced last week in Samford. It averages 41 points per game, but Samford, of course, an FCS school, put up 41 points. So you have to think that A&M offense probably a little better despite the numbers not being there just because they're an SEC opponent. They're number four in the country according to the college football playoff. So that, to me, what's jumping out is how is Mississippi State going to slow down that potent Aggies offense when it couldn't slow down Samford and really hasn't slowed down anyone in the last month. Four of the last five opponents have scored at least 35 points.
Yeah, and looking at it from the defensive standpoint, you know, everybody is always talking about, raving about that defensive line for Mississippi State. Still some high-caliber players, but the defensive side of the ball is really where the Bulldogs have struggled so far this year.
It really has been, and that's the crazy thing because I think going into the year, it was supposed to be the unit that really carried the team and helped out that offense when it struggled, and it really hasn't been there. And the offense has been okay. We've seen Nick Fitzgerald put up some Dak Prescott-like numbers, whether it was against South Carolina rushing for 190-some-odd yards, which was a record by a Mississippi State quarterback, or last week throwing for five touchdown passes, having seven total in a game. So the offense has been pretty good. Now, half the games, it scored 21 or less points. So it's been good and bad, but even if you say they're 4-4 in those games when the offense plays well, it doesn't play well, it's still better than the 3-5 mark where the defense as I said, especially in the last month, just hasn't shown up at all.
Yeah, is there some reason for concern? I see Fitzgerald has done some great stuff on offense for Mississippi State this year. Is there some reason for concern, though, going up against A&M's defensive front and those defensive ends with the ability to find other weapons that if Fitzgerald is able to be contained a little bit by those guys?
Yeah, I think it is. It is a concern because Nick Fitzgerald has been the guy. And when he hasn't played very well, the offense has struggled. As I said, half the games they've scored three touchdowns or less. So, and another game they've played really well. So he's really all of the offense for Mississippi State. That's the aspect I think Dan Mullen wouldn't like to repeat from last year. They had Dak Prescott. Clearly he could handle a load as a redshirt sophomore in his first year starting. It's a lot to ask for out of Nick Fitzgerald. So they really don't have a proven running back behind him. They don't have a big play threat down the field like a Dorenya Wilson. Fred Ross has been good this year, but he's more of a slot receiver or a possession guy. Donald Gray played well last week, but he's been hit or miss a lot of the season. He's their deep play threat, but against superior opponents, he really hasn't shown up. So that is certainly a concern. If A&M can slow down and get to Nate Fitzgerald, where does the offensive firepower come from?
Right. And on the defensive side of the ball, when we've talked to a lot of other beat writers at places, other teams, it seemed like the overwhelming strategy on defense was make Trevor Knight be a quarterback, a 50% completion kind of guy, make him pass the ball, make him get the ball outside. Well, Mississippi State coming in 14th in the conference in passing defense, do you think that still would be the strategy for these guys, or do you think that they're going to want to try to fare with what they can with A&M running the ball?
I think it's so, I guess, bad to say, but I think the number one thing for Mississippi State they're focused on, and the thing they've talked about all week, is just tackling. They had 20 missed tackles against Samford last week. There was not very good effort against Samford, so it's weird to say when you think about eight games in the season, but the Mississippi State defense really going back to basics, and they're focusing on just stopping people and tackling them once they gain some yards or catch a pass and flocking to the ball and all 11 guys running to the ball and just giving effort throughout the entire game. It's weird to say that, and I understand it's kind of a weird answer, but that's really what they're trying to do after giving up 41 points to Samford, 40 points to Kentucky, 38 points to Auburn and 35 to UMass. Those are four of the last five opponents. They just really haven't been able to do anything on defense. So really the talk this week has been the basics and just working on tackling.
Visiting with Michael Bonner. He is the Mississippi State beat reporter for the Clarion Ledger there in Jackson, Mississippi. And Mike, as you look on Texas A&M's roster, they've got a lot of Mississippi guys, or at least some real prevalent guys that are from Mississippi, Avery Genesee being one. Justin Evans being another. So they have guys with ties to Mississippi. And I know Mississippi State has a lot of guys with ties to Texas. You mentioned Fred Ross being a Tyler, Texas native. Has that come up a whole lot throughout this week?
You know, we haven't gotten to speak with the offense yet. We'll speak with them tonight. And I know, yeah, Fred Ross being from Texas. I believe Jesse Jackson is close with Justin Evans of Texas A&M, both Mississippi guys as well. So the offensive guys will speak to tonight, and I'm sure it will come up because any time, you know, Fred Ross can play a school that where, you know, he grew up watching, it's a big deal. And then vice versa for Jesse Jackson, who may be going up against the defender that he was very close with in high school. It's adding something to the game. There's no question about that.
And coming into this ball game, what are Mississippi State fans feeling? What's the sense that you've gotten from them? I mean, is there – I guess obviously there's going to be a little bit of disappointment when you're out to a 3-5 start, but are they looking at this game as one of the premier games that Mississippi State can really, if they get a win, kind of put themselves back in the hunt for a good bowl game?
They are, in the sense that it could be a good way of kind of finding a win in the season. I think at this point, bowl opportunities are lost with this team. Yes, they have four games remaining, but it's home against A&M, at Alabama, home against Arkansas, and at Ole Miss. Four very good teams in the SEC, regardless of records. They're very talented. So Mississippi State would have to win three of those games, and it just doesn't seem possible. Maybe you get one, maybe you get two, but to find three wins in that November schedule isn't really there. So I think when you look at any one of those games, if Mississippi State was to pull an upset, it will be something to hang their hat on and fans would appreciate. But to hope for bowl at this point – fans have really kind of lost all hope of even trying to contend for a bowl this season.
Yeah, yeah. On another front, with you getting to this point in the season in SEC play, how healthy is the team? And, you know, you hear of some of the bigger injuries, but sometimes you by watching the team, you know, yeah, they're a little bit more bumped or bruised, or no, they've been able to rest after an FCS week. How healthy is this Mississippi State team?
They're banged up, but I think they're pretty healthy in the sense because they did have an FCS team to play last week. Kevon Coleman, who missed 3 weeks, is back this week. He could have played against Stanford, he said. A.J. Jefferson sat out last week. He said he could have played as well. So there were a lot of precautionary sit-outs in that sense. And other than that, they should have everyone returning this week that missed last week's game, other than Talando Cleveland, who's up for the year with a torn ACL. But all the bumps and bruises, they were able to sit those guys last week to give them an extra week. So they should be good to go heading into A&M. Just the usual wear and tear from a football season, but nothing major.
And Mike, before we let you go, looking at this from Mississippi State standpoint, what are some real keys to you? What are the Bulldogs going to have to do well Saturday if they want a shot at winning this thing?
They're going to have to play a perfect game, or as close as they can. And by that, I mean not turning the ball over, making tackles when the tackles are available. They can't play less than 100% because they're just not as good as Texas A&M. They're not going to be able to upset a team when they're only playing a half, which they've done this year. They played one good half and one bad half. They need to play all four quarters. They have to play their best. And even then, that might not be enough. But any mistakes, any miscues, A&M is just a better team. They'll take advantage of that, and it won't be close.
Mike Bonner, he's the man with the Mississippi State coverage at the Clarion Ledger there in Jackson, Mississippi. Mike, really do appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And good luck this weekend, and just see you around. I know Travis is going to be making the trip to Starkville, so he'll probably see you around. You going to be at the game?
Yes, I will be, yep.
Okay, well, fantastic. Well, you got that going for you. Mike, really do appreciate it. Thanks so much. Can you feel it? A grassroots movement is emerging in Aggieland.
We decided to put Mr. Connor McQueen on the ticket. And to be honest with you, we think we have a solid campaign going, and we look forward to Mr. McQueen running this country for us.
A trio of young play callers have said enough is enough. It's time for a change. It's time for unity. It's time for change.
There's a lot of firsts throughout history, and you know, I think it'd be groundbreaking to be the first ginger-headed quarterback. And not quarterback, president, that also was a quarterback. There we go.
Connor McQueen, a name people remember, a holder his teammates can trust.
He's done a great job of winning over Aggieland. Obviously, you hear the roars when he comes into the game.
He's nobody's backup. Make America whoop again with Connor McQueen in 2016.
I'm Connor McQueen. I'm running for president in 2016, and I approve this message.
Vote McQueen Knight Hubenek in 2016. Why the hell not?
Not paid for by the Commission for Aggie World Domination. Jason Cook, Treasurer.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Again, Zach Taylor alongside Travis Brown. And joining us today, a very special guest, one Ryan Posner. And Ryan, he knows quite a bit about baseball. Let me give you a little bit of background. You're originally from San Diego, correct?
Yes.
And you moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area over this past summer. Is that what it was?
Yeah, right. Middle, beginning of May.
Okay, and you were interning under T.R. Sullivan, who writes for MLB.com as the
yes.
Rangers beat writer. He's been doing it for forever, right?
He's the colonel.
Yeah, yeah, the colonel. So he's been doing it for a long time. So you were covering the Rangers for the entire in the entire summer. Now, are you a big baseball fan just by trade? I mean, do you just love watching baseball?
Absolutely. I lucky to get the job there.
Yeah.
That was perfect landing spot. Baseball's been number one. Love all sports, but for some reason, it's always had that mystique. Always had that draw to it.
Yeah, I think we share that together. Probably Travis does, too. I know Travis was a big baseball guy. And watching this World Series, obviously, have you been watching it quite a bit,
yes,
a lot of these
yes.
games? And I think it intrigues so many people outside of baseball in that you've got two teams that haven't won it since, well, the Indians haven't won it since 1945, and the Cubs haven't won it since 1908. So either way, a team who hasn't won it in a really long time is going to win it, and there's plenty of fans for both of these teams. And I remember watching the game last night. It was pretty cool. They had Eddie Robinson, who is the oldest living, or he's the only living team member of that 1945 World Series championship for the Cleveland Indians. Or was it 48? Was it 48 or 45?
I want to say 48. I think you had
either way. It was a long time ago for sure. So 1948 was the last time. I think it had been 45 since the Cubs had been in the World Series. So 1948 was the last time that the Cleveland Indians won. And the last remaining player from there, Eddie Robinson, was there last night. Plano, Texas guy, lives in Plano. He was originally from Paris. Boy, he looked good for 95.
Yeah.
Did he not?
Yeah.
Apparently, he still golfs every week, and I mean, you know, doesn't use a cane or anything. I mean, he's just he looks good.
Yeah,
he looks good. They were talking about that, just like, I hope I look as good as he is when I'm 50. But that was last night. Of course, they played Game 6. The Indians had a chance to clinch it, win it at home in front of a fan base who, as we talked about, had not seen a championship win from the Indians since 1948. And they ended up getting blown out by the Cubs. I mean, it was just kind of a Chicago roll last night. And looking at that game, you saw what has made the Cubs so good throughout this year. They had Jake Arrieta, who was pitching fantastic out on the mound, another Plano, Texas guy. And then you had guys like Aroldis Chapman, who came in and threw a lot of innings in relief and just basically quieted those Cleveland bats. And overall, a big-time win for the Cubs to force a Game 7 tonight.
Yeah, the best thing the Indians had going for them last night, which Josh Tomlin didn't only last 2 1/3 innings, was not a great outing. Addison Russell hit a grand slam off him, but Andrew Miller did not get used. They have Corey Kluber on the mound tonight. So that with that being said, you're looking, if you're the Cubs, you're staring right into the barrel of two of the best pitchers in this postseason, and on the Indians, no doubt. Kyle Hendricks has been one of the better stories pitching-wise this year, former Rangers player. He got traded for Ryan Dempster. They're still a little upset about that. Kyle Hendricks has been great for the Cubs to come out and win tonight. They're going to need somebody out of that bullpen. I mean, Chapman's going to come in. I can see the win or lose, he's going to come in at some point, even though he threw all those pitches. I heard A.J. Hinch of the Astros, he had it put it best. You use your bullpen wisely during the regular season to use them like they're using them now, like just wildly. Andrew Miller is throwing three innings a night. Aroldis Chapman threw a season-high pitches to get them back into Cleveland.
Right.
It's going to be somebody out of that bullpen, whether it's Pedro Strop, whether it's Edwards. He's come on, the young guy. They're gonna need somebody out of that bullpen to step up and relieve Hendricks, because Hendricks is probably going to go about 6 or 7, hopefully, in best-case scenario for them.
That definitely has to be the best-case scenario, because I think a lot of people were scratching their head last night when the Cubs were up by, 9-1, and you're thinking, why is Joe Maddon putting Aroldis Chapman out there, one? And two, why is he having him pitch over an inning? You know, he pitched an inning in a third and got touched up for a run. So why put him out there whenever he's clearly your best reliever in the bullpen? You can save him for that all-important Game 7. You pretty much got this one in the bag. That being said, you can never make that assumption that you've got the game in the bag. So I understand why he wants to put his best guy out there. But, yeah, it's definitely advantage Indians because they, as you said, have Andrew Miller. They also, by the way, have Corey Kluber, who the Cubs have not been able to figure out in two times facing him so far this series.
Yeah, Corey Kluber, I mean, just that alone should be enough to scare most Cubs fans. If he struck out eight of his first nine batters like in game one. I mean, just absurd. And Andrew Miller is capable of the same stuff. And I mean, like, without pitching last night, he probably could have already went 2 or 3 innings, even if he did. But without pitching, you could go 3 or 4 innings. I mean, without even thinking. I mean, that doesn't seem too out of the realm of possibility. It's gonna be. I think it's gonna be a pitching battle tonight, to say the least. I mean, Kyle Hendricks, he's very Greg Maddux-esque. You know, you look at the radar gun, you're like, man, this guy's throwing like 90 miles an hour. Why can't you hit him? I mean, he just locates. He locates so well. And the Cubs have a lot of power on the side of them. I mean, we saw last night Rizzo and Bryant both homered, and Addison Russell with the grand slam. But I think it's going to come down to pitching and which bullpen is going to be able to throw up the most zeros at the end of the game.
It's been fun for me to go in there and watch what Jake Arrieta has been able to do the past 2 years, just really turning his game around. And I think, full disclosure, I'm a guy who caught him in college, and he always had good stuff, but I think that the thing that he's improved over the last 2 years is his mental game, the ability to, give up a hit, give up a home run or a run and turn it around and stay in the game and make that next pitch. And I think that that's been the difference for the past 2 years compared to the rest of his career. And that even goes back into college, where he was an All-American because he had that good stuff. It's just putting that mental game together. It's been a cool turnaround to see what he's been able to do for the Cubs. And with I think a lot of that has to do with Maddon there, the manager of the Cubs, and what he can do mentally for his team.
No, I agree with you, because there's obviously a big difference between whenever he was with Baltimore to now being with the Cubs. And as you mentioned, Joe Maddon has been there the entire time. Let's not overlook the pitching coaching either for the Cubs. You know, and just the ability to have him on his A game, and he's proven these past two seasons that he is an ace. And he pitched very, very well last night. I don't think they expected anything different from him. But that does set up a big-time showdown tonight, and I'm really excited to see this game, because as we talked about, some team who hasn't won it in 50-plus years, whether that be the Cubs, who haven't won in 100-plus years, or the Indians, who haven't won it 50-plus, one of them is going to crack that curse tonight, and it should be a lot of fun to watch. Again, first pitch is set for 7 o'clock in Cleveland. Corey Kluber up against Kyle Hendricks, who, of course, all the Rangers fans are really upset that he's no longer in the organization. So that's pretty sad. But guys, going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll keep this bad boy moving. Again, you're listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Part of the show, it's our college football guest pick'em week. And by the way, Travis, you didn't do too shabby last week. We were talking about this. You were actually 5-3, which brings your total on the year to 34-18. You were batting well over 500, sir.
All I do is win, no matter what.
So congratulations. I, on the other hand, am 31-21, which is not too shabby myself, but the guests are 32-20, so I'm losing to the guests. But hopefully this week, now that we've got Ryan in, he's a baseball guy, maybe he doesn't know anything about college football. Yeah, and maybe I'll luck out a little bit.
I doubt it.
So that would be, well, I do too, or else we wouldn't have him on. All right, guys, we'll go ahead and start. We've got several good games that are on the slate. We'll start with a big one. This is a big Big Ten matchup. Nebraska at Ohio State. And after all the college football playoff rankings, all that mess got underway, Nebraska and now at number 10. Meanwhile, Ohio State is at number 5. So, looking at this matchup, what say you, Travis Brown, about who's going to get this win? By the way, Ohio State is number 6. I apologize. Nebraska, number 10, but they are at the horseshoe.
Yeah, Ohio State has a lot more to play for here. I think they have to keep with that keep that ranking up to have a shot at getting into the playoff. They want to be in that position where it comes down to a resume duel with Texas A&M and possibly Louisville, but I think they have outgunned Louisville a little bit. So just a whole lot more to play for Ohio State. A little bit better squad. Ohio State gets this one.
All right, so you've got the Buckeyes. Ryan, our guest picker for today, who have you got?
Gonna have to stick with where Travis is going on that. Ohio State, Nebraska, I feel definitely outplaying expectations this year, and they've done a fantastic job. I mean, up to last week they were undefeated, and now I think going into Ohio State, only caught a little bit of the game last week against Northwestern, but I saw enough. They jumped out to a 21-0 lead, so I'm not gonna go against the powerhouse there. I'm gonna stick with the mighty Ohio State.
And now, in Northwestern's defense, they did kind of make it a game towards the end, and Ohio State pulled away again. I don't know if the Buckeyes are all that good, but they are better than Nebraska. I've got Ohio State winning this one. By the way, the line in this game is at 17, exactly 17 points for Ohio State, which is pretty crazy. That's almost as big as the 19 points, I think, with Texas A&M and Alabama. But hey, guess what? Vegas kind of knows what they're talking about, because they got that one right on the money. Another one, Texas at Texas Tech. This is going to be a hated rivalry. Texas has a player coming out saying they want to hurt Pat Mahomes. Charlie Strong is holding on to his job after a big win over Baylor. What are we going to see from this ball game in Lubbock? It's going to be awfully tense. Who you got, Travis?
See, you know, you think Texas and Texas Tech, and you want to go back to that 2008 Michael Crabtree game and all the pomp and circumstance and glory that went. Yeah, this really isn't going to be anywhere close to that. It's going to be a lot of offense. There's going to be a lot of scoring, and probably not a whole lot of defense being played. But you know, This is just not Texas's year. I thought Texas Tech was going to be one of the teams to compete for the Big 12 title this year. They couldn't muster any sort of defense whatsoever, and just kind of have lost games that they should have won. That being said, I still don't think this is Texas' year. Suns out, guns out. Give me Texas Tech in that one.
Wow, taking the hometown Red Raiders after you just talked about how terrible they were. And they also beat your Horned Frogs at Amon G. Carter last week in, what, two overtimes? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
So apologies for that, but that's okay. You'll get over it. You'll figure something out. So he's got Texas Tech riding. What say you?
You got two teams coming off probably their best wins of the year, you could say. TCU, obviously, for Texas Tech, and then Texas beating Baylor. But unless Patrick Mahomes does get hurt, I don't see a way that Texas wins this game. I mean, you look at the way they scored against Oklahoma. I think, kind of like Travis alluded to, it's going to be an offensive game. And if that's the way it goes, I got Texas Tech as well.
So two guys that picked Texas Tech. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of surprised that you guys are picking the Red Raiders.
You're kind of surprised that we're picking?
Because initially I was going to pick Texas Tech. But now that you guys have all gone with Texas Tech, I have no other choice. As much as it pains me, as much as it kills me, I have no other choice but to pick the Longhorns in this one. They are 3.5-point favorites, mind you, by Vegas at this point. The line is 3.5. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. All the Texas Tech fans are still going to be hungover from the night before. There won't be a lot of them going to the game. If it was nighttime, it might be a completely different story, because once you go into Lubbock at night, you might not get out alive. But in this case, I think Texas Tech is going to come in. Pat Mahomes is beat up. And I think Texas is going to pull off what some could deem as an upset on the road. So we'll see.
Well, here's the deal. And we actually talked about this on the podcast. I've talked about this. I think Lubbock is one of the most difficult places to go in and play. It just simply is. It is actually hostile. You talk about hostile in places where you say, like, oh, that's a hostile crowd. Well, okay, they're loud. They're a little bit loud. Tech, you actually, things get thrown at you.
Yeah, you fear for your life.
There is very, very, very naughty words shouted at you. Like, it is actually hostile. And so it's one of the better college football environments around there, because, like, you're actually scared for your own, safety.
I mean, if I was living out in the desert with nothing to do, I'd probably be drunk and angry as well. But, so Texas Tech, you two have them, the Red Raiders winning at home. I've got Texas going in and stopping the Cliffy Cliff train, so we'll see about that. Either way, probably will be a high-scoring game. Another one that's liable to be a high-scoring game, Oklahoma State at Kansas State. Okie Light coming off a big win over West Virginia, but this is going to be in the Little Apple up there in Manhattan, Kansas. Could they get it done at Bill Snyder? Was it Family Restaurant Stadium, something like that? I forgot what the name of it is. It's something Bill Snyder, right?
Yeah, the Snyder family tree.
Reunion tree.
Yeah,
something like that. Coaching tree. But who have you got in this ballgame?
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma State has been impressive this year. I mean, I thought West Virginia was going to be the team to reckon with in the Big 12 this year. I bought in. I thought they were the real deal, and Oklahoma State went and took care of business. So give me Mason Rudolph, the Gundy mullet, and Pistol Pete for the win.
You got the visiting team coming in, Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy, after just picking up his 100th career win, coming in and knocking off the old wizard, of Oz or Manhattan, whatever, mind you, and Bill Snyder coming in and getting that win. By the way, Kansas State is 2.5-point favorites in that game.
Yeah, I have three here.
Which is very shocking to me. I would not have guessed that, especially Okie Light being the 18th-ranked team. But Ryan, what say you?
I know for my last pick, I went with a team coming off a big win this week. I'm not feeling the same. I know Oklahoma State coming off their win against West Virginia. Kansas State, though, I'm not 100% sure of the hostile environment, but you got the Bill Snyder Family Stadium. You got the whole fam there. I'm thinking they come away with a victory against number 18 Oklahoma State.
Just when I was starting to really think, man, this Ryan has some stuff going. I mean, he is a smart cookie. He goes and picks Kansas State over Oklahoma State. Of course not. Of course not. Oklahoma State is going to go in and roll with this. I don't know what the people in Vegas are thinking, that Kansas State is somehow going to knock Oklahoma State off by 2.5 points. Mason Rudolph and company are going to go in there, and they are going to whip all of the JUCO guys that Bill Snyder has recruited to come and play at Kansas State. It's. I don't even think this one's going to be close. I think Oklahoma State goes in and they win big in this one.
Kansas State 1-3-1 against the spread this year.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
So it very well could end
as the favorite. As the favorite.
Yep. So that does not bode very well.
Right, them. Right.
So we'll take a look and see. But again, Oklahoma State at Kansas State should be an interesting one in the Big 12.
Alabama at LSU. Ed Orgeron.
They got them boys playing good. Ed Orgeron got all the LSU players. They playing really, really good.
And so will they be able to knock off the undisputed number one in the college football playoff rankings, Alabama, at Tiger Stadium? By the way, this is going to be a night game in Death Valley. Things get weird in Death Valley at nighttime.
Yeah.
Is there a chance? Could they? Might they? Do you have them picked to beat them?
There is a chance. There is always a chance, but it's not going to happen this time. Alabama is just too good. I mean, this is a season where in past seasons you've had two or three teams that really were dominant in different conferences, and you knew, like, okay, these three teams are really going to solidify themselves as the playoff contenders or the teams to go for the BCS. This year, I think it's Alabama and all the rest. I just, you know, they are really good this year. So, yeah, LSU has something to kind of fight for a little bit. You know, they're kind of resurging under Coach O, but, yeah, they're not going to get it done.
Interesting. You got the Tide rolling in Baton Rouge. Ryan, what do you think?
I think this game being in Death Valley, like you mentioned, that almost it makes it, I think it adds an element where you can really have a chance to pick LSU, where that doesn't seem like it's a conceivable notion. But like Travis was saying, I mean, Alabama this year, they're a force to be reckoned with. It'd be tough for me to pick against them any game, especially a game like this, middle of the season when they're starting to hit their stride. I got Alabama.
This is an interesting one for me, and it would not be. It would be ultimately, I think Alabama would roll if this were in Tuscaloosa. That being said, it's in Death Valley. It's a night game. The Raging Cajuns are going to be hungry. And they're going to be angry.
The Raging Cajuns are in.
But there's still a lot of.
Okay.
Lafayette. They're in Lafayette, but there's still plenty of Cajuns. And they're going to be raging come Saturday night for this game. And they're going to be throwing all sorts of stuff at Nick Saban because he's a traitor to them. And they're angry. And they're upset. And they've got this new philosophy on life under Farmer Fran, a.k.a. Ed Orgeron. And I think that Bobby Boucher is going to show up at halftime and lead the Mud Dogs to the Super Bowl. I think LSU is going to pull off the upset because they're at home. Leonard Fournette is healthy. And I think Alabama is going to get stunned. They're going to get knocked in the mouth, and they're not used to having that. They've still a very good defense in LSU. I never would have thought I would have said this earlier on in the season, but I think LSU has a good shot at winning this one, and I'm going to go with the Tigers.
So here's my question. Do you actually think LSU has a shot in this, or is this just your strategy to get back up in the standings?
It might be a little bit of both. You know, at this point, it's late in the season. I've got to make up some ground, but I also, I really like Ed Orgeron.
Yeah.
I think it's... It's fantastic that he gets to come back home, and he's, you know, we all realize that Cajun country is a little bit different down there, and he gets it because he's from there. He's one of them. And he comes down, he pumps these guys up. Leonard Fournette is back. He seems to be healthy. And Alabama, as good as they are, and it's going to be a slugfest. I don't think it's going to be a very high-scoring game, but I think that LSU has a legitimate shot. And with it being a night game in Death Valley, I think that just kind of adds to it.
Sure.
And with all that, I think LSU does have a pretty good chance at this one. So I'm going to pick the Tigers. And then last but not least, we've got A&M. Did I skip him?
No.
Did I skip Ryan?
No. Oh. I just want you to go to him next.
Okay.
Start with him.
Well, okay. Well, we'll start with Ryan then. Okay, fine. You got Texas A&M at Mississippi State. The Bulldogs are 3-5 on the year. The Aggies are 7-1. They recently were ranked 4th in the college football playoff rankings, which I got my own thoughts about that. But could this be almost a trap game in a lot of ways? When you got A&M going on the road, it's going to be Kalanga, 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 Kalanga out there in the stadium. You got Stingray screaming at the top of his lungs. He's firing the fans up. He's got all kinds of tricks and up his sleeve that he's going to pull out against the Aggies. Can they go on the road and put this one away, or are they going to let Mississippi State hang around long enough to get the win? Ryan, what do you think?
I think you intro that perfectly. I mean, this could be a trap game. You got an SEC opponent. It's not like New Mexico State last week where you got a team that really you knew going from the beginning it was going to be about how many points you won by, not necessarily if you won or not. This game, I don't see that being the same way. You're going in, you're on the road, you're going in, all these... It's kind of redundant to say hostile environment because, I mean, like you said, they're just every stadium has their own. You got the cowbells. There's always something. But with that being said, you know, Trevor Knight at times looked fantastic against Alabama. There was just a couple of plays, you know, you could break it down to four or five plays that could have turned the tide around that game. And you're talking about Alabama, the number one team in the country, doing that in Tuscaloosa. But that being said, if you're going from Tuscaloosa to Starkville, I think they've played in these tough environments this year. They've gone on the road like that. And I can't see them losing this game, but I don't see it having that same vibe as New Mexico State, where you have that comfort factor of knowing you're walking away with the win, especially being ranked fourth in the poll already. You have that factor of already almost like you have the target on your back. You know, you're already in. So
Ryan has the Aggies going in, and he's saying that they really have to stand up. They can't just lay down after this fourth ranked everything else that they've got going on. So that being said, Travis, could this be an upset, or do you have the Aggies just rolling away with it?
I think when it's all said and done, A&M is going to win by a healthy margin. But I don't think the score is going to be indicative of the play on the field. I think that a lot of these players, despite everything that they say, I made the analogy last night on our Periscope that when you're playing a game of pool and you get down to that final eight ball and the other people you're playing still have a lot of balls out there.
Is this playing pool in real life or on your phone like you're prone to do?
Both.
Both, a little bit of both. You can use the strategy no matter where you are.
Right. So when you're down to that eight ball and your opponent still has a ways to go, you relax a little bit, or you get a little tense. Like the personality of your play usually changes a little bit. And I think with A&M, yeah, they might not have watched the selection show, or they might not quote-unquote buy into the hype, but that number four is going to be in the back of your head, because you know you're on the brink, on the verge of being in that college football playoff, so you want to preserve. And I think it'll make things a little bit sloppy. I think it'll be a little bit of a sloppy game for A&M, not too unlike what happened in the first half of New Mexico State. So, yeah, A&M's going to win, but I don't think you should necessarily – you're not going to feel good about this team after the win. Not saying that means anything for the future. I just think it takes some time adjusting for these teams to adjust to being in that kind of spotlight and having that kind of pressure on their shoulders.
We'll have to see, because Texas A&M is entering a realm that they have not been in for a very long time. At least definitely not in the Kevin Sumlin era since Johnny Manziel's first year. You can argue at the end of the year they were, but they were not throughout the regular season. They were always fighting from behind. But now all of a sudden, you talked about, they have a big target on their back from here on out, because more than likely they're going to be favored in every single game. But that being said, you're going to Starkville.
Can I just say one thing?
Say it, baby. Just say it.
I'm standing here staring at rock legend Bruce Dickinson.
The cock and a walk, baby.
And if Bruce Dickinson wants more cowbell, we should probably give him more cowbell.
Say it, baby.
And Bobby, you are right. I am being selfish. But the last time I checked, we don't have a whole lot of songs that feature the cowbell.
I gotta have more cowbell, baby.
I'd be doing myself a disservice and every member of this band if I didn't perform the hell out of this.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
And that's exactly what Dan Mullen's got. He's got a fever. He is at 150 degrees because he's 3-5 on the year. He needs more cowbell, baby. I need some more cowbell. Is he going to get it? He's going to get it on Saturday. There's going to be plenty of cowbell going on. But the Aggies are going to win it pretty easily. All that being said, I just had to lead that up to that, because obviously there's a lot of cowbell going on. There's a lot of cowbell playing.
That was a Lee Corso-esque buildup.
Well, yeah, if ESPN is going to be looking for somebody for College Game Day, granted, I never played collegiate football. I never coached it. But I can definitely play the hell out of that thing, being the cowbell. And I can play the hell out of this segment. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
You could be the bit master.
So, that being said, all things said and done, A&M is going to roll in this one. I mean, Mississippi State gave up how many points to Samford last week? 41?
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad, man. Things, in Starkville, Mississippi State has been at the lower part of the totem pole in the SEC for quite some time. They actually
seen some success that they hadn't seen in a very long time, probably since Jackie Sherrill was there in the early 2000s when Dan Mullen came in. But as of right now, they are just not that good. I do like Nick Fitzgerald. I think he'll give the Aggies fits at times, but there just is not enough around him to have you scratching your head at this one. I got Aggs taking it all the way.
Clean sweep of A&M across the board here for the My Aggie Nation podcast. So go tune in that game, check it out, hear a little bit of cowbell, and watch as probably, at least as we say, the Aggies will roll. Well, that's the My Aggie Nation podcast for this week. Thanks to Ryan Posner for coming and picking and talking some baseball with us, and all the rest of our guests coming and talking Mississippi State and baseball with us today. We're off to Starkville this week to watch A&M play Mississippi State. After that is back home for several games, including a big one against Ole Miss. So come back next week. We'll break down that Ole Miss game, and we'll see where Texas A&M is in the college football playoff poll at that point. But until then, we'll see you later.
Gotta have more cowbell, babe.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. I wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. I wanna make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be.